Hello and welcome back to the Sunday podcast. I'm Ollie Lum, and as always, I'm joined by my co-host, Matt Seddon. Look, guys, episode 50. I can't quite believe we've made it this far. It's pretty much been, what, a year of the podcast, Matt. Did you think we'd make it this far, mate?
No, to be honest, yeah, probably not. You know, I didn't know if it was going to, you know, if it was going to go down well, people were going to respond to it. Would we just be like flogging a dead horse? And then as well, like, would we have maybe not stopped enjoying it is the wrong word, but would we have maybe, you know, grown tired of it, not being able to keep it up and fit it into our lifestyles? But mate, we've loved every minute and we've always made time for it. And what's more is we got to thank all the guests, because we wouldn't have a podcast without the guests. And we just hope we're going about it the right way. You know, me and you started it to highlight basically elite distance running in the UK. I know we've had a few American guests on, but we just want to highlight running in general and just raise the profile and just cover the sport more, which is a sport which struggles recovery. So we hope we're doing that. And from feedback and people loving the podcast, it's just kept us even more motivated to do it. So we appreciate everyone who listens week in, week out as well, don't we?
Yeah, 100%. And basically, guys, we just want you to keep on listening, because this isn't us saying 50 eps and we're done now. This is going to be the end of what we call in season one, if you like, of the pod. So we're going to have a couple weeks rest, maybe 3 or 4 max, but nothing too long for you guys. So you'll have to listen to something else on Sunday.
Yeah, I think it's more. We just need a couple weeks to basically keep the guest list coming. Because, you know, post track season, post Olympics, we got to thank everyone we've had on the past, what, 2 or 3 months. But you know, it has been hard, hasn't it, getting the guests on and making sure we have a good guest for you guys every week, which is relevant and topical. So it's more just a little bit of time for me and Ollie to just regroup and plan, you know, at least
make sure. Make sure it's all flowing nicely. And we've already got some exciting guests lined up, so we won't spoil anything like that. And we're also really pleased to say that, look, season two, we're going to be supported by sportsshoes.com. They obviously helped us out on a couple of competitions and giveaways for you guys before, but, like, just massive shout out to them, because they're supporting us fully for season two. So we're going to officially be the Sunday podcast presented by sportsshoes.com. So that's really exciting. And hopefully, and I'm sure that they'll be able to help us with sorting that out as well for season two. So that'll be back. That's the exciting news. But look, it is still at 50, and we couldn't let you have at 50 without a world-class guest. Like, this guy needs no introduction. He's our first Olympic medalist on the podcast. It's the main man. It's Josh Kerr.
Yeah. I mean, huge guest. We got to thank Josh for coming on for episode 50. And, you know, he highlights it himself. He was so approachable, easy to get hold of. And God, you know, where do I start? You know, we covered it all. You know, I do think, you know, I think I said to Josh at the end of the podcast, I said, mate, you've got a career in media when you're done, because this guy knows how to talk, he knows how to present himself. But look, we actually delve into a lot. You know, it's a long one to get out for a nice long run today, because we just had a lot of ground to cover with Josh. You know, his career has been phenomenal, and it's been a very calculated career, in a sense that every choice he's made has been very important. You know, he hasn't just made, you know, 50-50 choices, and he's thought about everything he's done up to this point. And there was only one thing in the back of his mind when he was making these choices, you know, like going to the NCAAs, like signing with Brooks. And that one thing was, what's going to make me, you know, one of the best in the world, Olympic champion, Olympic medalist. Do you know what I mean? So I think the biggest takeaway, Alan, would you say, just the guy's mindset? I think there's 100%. A lot of people out there who may listen, or coaches, and just be like, Jesus, if only I could have that mindset, or give my athlete that mindset, because that was a huge takeaway for me.
Yeah, 100%. Like, everything you say there is so true, and it's just so interesting to get Josh's perspective on what's been an incredible season for him. And he talks it through kind of from college, obviously going to New Mexico, signing with Brooks, and then I think he talks about his progression, obviously finishing, going out in the heats, I think, in his first world champs, then getting a sixth place. And then obviously now he's medaled. And where do you go from there? The only way is up in Josh Kerr's eyes. And I think if you listen to this podcast, it will make you believe it. Like, the way he talks about his running, you really believe what he's got to say. Well, that's what I took from it anyway.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and we did. Yeah, we discussed it all. You know, we discussed, you know, we've talked quite a lot about shoe contracts and how the money side of things works. You know, Josh openly talks about that with us. So really enjoyed that part as well. Coaching, everything, you know, second everything you just said. It's a brilliant podcast. Look, me and you are done talking. Let's let them enjoy it. Get out for a good long run. And as always, you know, we just thank you for tuning in, week out. And we'll be back.
Yeah, cheers, guys. Enjoy the pod.
It's quite funny because I feel like doing it, people must have thought that I was getting all these media requests. But yeah. Like, Brooks like gave me like quite a few, but it's like people didn't want me or didn't think I was going to respond to like podcasts that I would listen to, like just like people that I know and things like that. And so no one was really asking me to be on podcasts. And whenever anyone asked me, I'm like, yeah, definitely, that sounds great. Because no one's asking.
I think you're on, yeah. Because you've done like one of the biggest achievements ever. It's like, wow, there's no way we'll be able to get in touch with it.
Exactly. Like people just don't get it. I'm like, I go through my message requests. If I don't message you back, then I've probably read it.
You're a humble guy. Right, over to London.
Yeah, well, look, first of all, mate, just welcome to the podcast. It feels like we've got podcast royalty in the house. Obviously with your own pod and obviously a bit of running on the side as well. Look, congrats on the Olympic medal. How long did it take to sink in, first of all?
It's weird, man, because you're surrounded by people the whole time you're there. So we crossed the finish line, tons of like, there was like photographers, this and that thing. People were going for a lap of honor. I was like, there's no one in the stadium. Why are you doing that? Like, terrible. I'm not doing another lap. Get chucked up, you do media, and then we got like filed through to like sit in these chairs to get like our medal ceremony stuff on. Chucked out, did the medal ceremony, did more media, waited for like an hour after me doing an hour of media because Jakob did like 2 hours of this like small media, got brought to a press conference, then got taken from the press conference to anti-doping. Did anti-doping, got taken back to the Olympic Village and with like all the Team GB people, had food, and then it was like I can finally like think, and so it took a while. We went out, well not out, but we all had beers and stuff that night, and we actually got locked out of our apartment, and so we stayed out all night until like 6, and then I was like, you know what, like I had a whole media day that I had to do, so I was like, I'm gonna go and run. Like, I'm going to go and, like, run and see if that will, like, help, like, my brain a little bit. So I went and did, like, a 6-mile run, just, like, breathing, man. And I was like, okay, like, that was pretty awesome. I'm very, very happy the way I performed here. And I was able to then kind of go on my day. I'm not saying it was because I was hungover and I needed to do a bunch of media, but that helped, the hangover. But it also helped, like, sinking in and being able to chat to family and stuff like that. So that was nice.
Yeah, that – did you – did all the British lads bring their presentation kit to the track that night?
Everyone but me. I wore JK Wood's presentation kit. So what you're meant to do is chuck your presentation kit in your bag that you bring to the track, and then they're meant to, like, you're meant to have it in your box, and they bring your box to the chair. And so I phoned the Team GB woman. I was like, I don't have my stuff. Like, and there, she was like, oh, okay, let me see if someone else has some. And I'm pretty sure I still got Hayward's stuff. Like, I've got mine and his stuff now. So if he wants it back, then he needs to text me. But, and I had his shoes on. Luckily, he was the same size shoes as me. Yeah, it was pretty stupid, but it is weird because you do pack the final day. You're meant to pack like you're going to be on that medal stand. So yeah, I was meant to bring it.
It's almost a case, like, I feel like you almost jinx it if you do bring it. Do you know what I mean? So it's kind of interesting to see that you didn't, or you forgot it. You know what I mean?
Well, so I did bring it to the track. I just didn't bring it, like, because you're meant to bring it in, like, the call room and all that stuff.
Yeah.
And I just didn't do that. Because I didn't, like, that's not, I was like, oh, I just have my spikes and some water. Like, I don't want to bring a whole bag. Yeah. So that's kind of the way I looked at it. But, yeah, and the thing is, everyone's obviously got the same stuff. So I'm like, oh, it's in the Team GB bag at some place, somewhere. And they're like, oh, okay, yeah, we'll just grab someone else's.
Look, we'll chat through the games a lot more because, obviously, that's, yeah, a huge topic. But we want to, you know, start, you know, where it all began for you. And interestingly, you know, obviously, you did the junior ranks in Scotland and you were a very good junior. But you know, we want to start with like 18-year-old Josh Kerr heading to New Mexico. You know, how did a chap from Scotland find New Mexico, you know, and how did all that come about?
So I actually moved. I was getting recruited when I was 16 because I left school at 17 to go over there. And so year before, I was like, okay, I'm going to start sending my emails out. And what I did is I kind of wrote out a bit of a running CV and was like, you know, these are times I've ran. These are the races I've won that I feel like are, you know, big enough where maybe someone can figure out what it is and things like that. And wrote a little bit about myself and put some photos in there and some links to some videos. And just sent it out to like all D1 head coaches, pretty much. Like I would just Google a university that I saw an NCAA cross country list, and I was like, all right, find an email address, send it. Find an email address, send it. And so me and my parents did that for months, and we would just get the response, mostly response back, like, hey, why don't you wait like a year, and like we'd love to talk to you next year, because like at the end of the day, you're racing against 21 to 23 year olds at the peak of NCAA. So a 16 year old is never going to create that much hype. Even though I felt like I had solid enough times for a 15 or 16 year old, but it's like, it doesn't compare. So time went on, kept doing it. I was persistent. And then I got an email back from the University of New Mexico and they said, we want you in the subject line. That's all it was. We want you. And there was no other part of the email. And I was like, gee, this is a scam. I was like, not sure. They're like, we can Skype or something like that. So I was like, cool. Skype the head coach once. He's like, yeah, we want you here. If you want to do it, let's do it. And I was like, I'm sold. Like, let's do it. And then I flew over there for the first day of practice. And that was about it, really. And so it was my only offer for a full ride over there. And so it just kind of, it was kind of meant to be a little bit in my head is probably the way I think about it romantically, but it kind of works out that way sometimes. And I think I definitely got lucky. There was some fantastic Brits that have gone through there in the past. So I did do a little bit of research being like, okay, this is a university where I feel like could be a good fit for me. And, but mostly it was like, it's my only offer. I'm heading over there regardless. No visit, 17, let's do it.
Yeah. Wow. Obviously, like from the story you just told then, it seems like you were clearly keen to go to the NCAA. What was it that first attracted you to the college scene in America? And like, how old were you then?
So when I was younger, I was training with under like Terry O'Hare and Dave Campbell. So Chris O'Hare used to come back from Tulsa in the summers or Christmas or whatever. And he would come and train with the team. And we would just listen to his stories and be like, oh, you know, you get paid to go to university over there. You get to learn your racing craft a bit. So I looked into it a bit more and I was like, if I want to make it as a pro, I need to learn how to race in loads of different races. And I don't feel like I can do that in the UK. Like with the system in the US, you run conference, you run regionals, you run nationals, you run all these different races. And you're able to kind of just race a ton and learn about your own racing strategy. So I was like, if I want to really take that next step to be a professional, this is the move. And so I was just like, every night just looking into all these different universities, like which one would want to take me and which one would I be happy going to. And so that was kind of the big idea there. And yeah, that, I've all for as long as I remembered, I'd want to come to the US to come to university. It just seemed like the move for me. And I was, you know, I didn't even apply to any Scottish or English universities. I was kind of all in, and that felt weird at times because I wasn't getting any bites, but you just kind of got to trust the process a little bit. There's so many universities over here as well. And there's obviously Division 2, Division 3, JUCO, NAIA. So, yeah, if you want to come over here, you'll find a spot.
Hey, what fascinates me about you is you kind of knew you wanted to be a professional athlete from a very young age. And like I've listened to, obviously, the Sit and Kick before. And, you know, like you said, every step you've taken was just to make you a professional athlete and to get you to win, you know, an Olympic medal. And I think that's very ballsy to do at such a young age.
Yeah, I think, you know, my dad was a professional rugby player and that just always looked like the way that he spoke and you know, the way I was at school. I didn't particularly enjoy school, but I loved sport. Like I loved PE. I loved doing all these different sports in school. And it was just like, I can do this for a living. Like I can actually, what I'm doing right now for this hour of my day could be the only thing I have to do for that day. Like, that's crazy. And so I was like, okay, like, this is what I want to do. This is what I'm passionate about. And I wanted to be a professional rugby player. Like, you want to be what your dad was, you know what I mean? And so me and my brother used to do that, and then we just got chucked into running. And then it was like, oh wow, like I can see the steps of where it takes to get to where I want to be, and I just got to be, I kind of got to be slow with it. I don't want to rush through things. Like I don't want to overtrain when I'm 13 years old, which is like a classic thing you do in the UK. Like you've got these crazy 13, 15, 16 year olds. They're really talented at that age, and everyone's like, oh, they're going to be the next big thing. But then you realize their training is like crazy and they can't really perform better than they have been. And then, yeah, it kind of just went that way where I was just following those steps that I created for myself from a young age. And having a parent that has been a professional athlete is very, it makes a lot of difference. And then, yeah, my brother's a professional rugby player and I'm a professional runner. So it kind of helps that way.
Yeah, I think it's like a mindset as well. But, you know, you went to the NCAAs and you made a huge impact. Was it your freshman year you dethroned Cheserek indoors, which probably, I mean, arguably for me, it's one of the best races, you know, I've ever seen. Like, I remember like me and Ollie were at uni and we used to obviously watch the indoor NCAAs and stuff. And it was an incredible race. And talking about training, you know, you went there, but you made a huge improvement still, you know, in quite a short space of time to like beat Cheserek. And it's almost like you came out of nowhere. What did training look like then?
Yeah, University of Mexico is like kind of crazy like that. So it was my freshman year. It was my redshirt freshman year. So right. You can redshirt in your freshman year, like without having any problems, without any medical issues. You can just, because sometimes you get in at 18, 17, I was 17 at the time. So I was like, I'll redshirt indoors my freshman year and then I'll do it. So it was technically my sophomore year, but I think I just turned 18. So It wasn't like, I was that old.
You technically went there early as well then.
Yeah, pretty much. Well, because I left school at 17. So because we do like one less year in the UK, I think.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. In Scotland, sorry.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I had a really tough like first semester. If you look at my freshman year cross country results, you'll see some pretty bad results there. And there was definitely a time I went home at Christmas and my parents were like, is this the move? Like, are you sure? Because, you know, I was struggling with a lot of things over there. Like, I kind of forgot you had to go to class over there a little bit. You know, I was like, I went there to run and I have to do all these classes. And I was like, that kind of sucks. But then it was just like, I didn't go over there for life to be easy. I went over there to work hard and get results. So that first freshman year was like a transition like stage. Like anyone at any university, it's like, you know, you're not living with your parents anymore. And even though this is the way that Chris O'Hare told me, he's like, yeah, if you went to an English university, you'd only see your parents twice a year anyway. So it doesn't make any difference. So I was like, I'm not going to tell my parents that one. But yeah, okay, that makes sense.
Good point.
So yeah, it was just like, we just consistently worked hard and I got lucky with injuries. I say luck, like I work hard to make sure I don't get injured, but I didn't really get any injuries in my college career. And I haven't really had many in my professional career, and that's where I find most of my success. It's just that consistency, and so I don't push the envelope very much in training. So yeah, like that first year, I think I ran sub-4 converted in the mile indoors, and then I ran I made it to the final of NCAAs outdoors and got 10th in the 15. So which is quite funny because my teammates now were second, third and fourth in that race. And they kind of kicked my ass in that day. But I then was like, okay, like this is how you make it to the top end of the NCAA. Went home, went through, took a redshirt during cross. One of my really good buddies from Scotland came over and started training at University of New Mexico, Johnny Glenn. And so we were just battling all the way throughout the year. And I was just like ready to rip in the indoors. And I was like, anyone's gonna win the race, it's me, you know, why not me, kind of thing. Same mentality I brought into the Olympics, you know, why not me? And then just kind of went for it. I think the Americans have a lot of respect for like really good athletes, and so like it's the same reason I believe that Central's been able to do what he's been doing for years upon years. He's a fantastic racer, but he also gets a little bit too much respect. So Chez was the same. Like, he got lucky in certain situations in his 17 national titles. I'm not saying he didn't deserve any of them, but he definitely got lucky in a couple of them. And so I wanted to make sure I kind of played it within my strength. So that was a fun race to run. And it's definitely, a lot of people still define me, even after the Olympics, they'll still define me as that guy that beat Chez in NCAAs. So I'm okay with that. I was pretty proud of that.
Yeah. Well, on that then, like, obviously you talk about kind of these guys getting maybe a bit too much respect sometimes. I think that's, it's true, but it's also easier said than done to kind of have the mentality of yourself in that you can step on the start line and believe that you can beat them, because these guys get respect obviously from doing great things. So do you think that's something you always had in you, or where did you develop that kind of ability to be ruthless and just back yourself?
I think it comes from being respected and thinking, I don't know why these guys respect me so much, because you can have an off day on any day. Like Ingebrigtsen's shoelace could have been undone. You know, Chariot could have had food poisoning that morning. Like, you can never give someone that much respect for just being who they are and what they've done in the past. And so it was like the same for me. Like, I've been favorites in races that I shouldn't have won. Like, to give an example, probably Outdoor NCAAs in 2017, when I was against like Engels, I should not have won that race. And I feel like I got a little bit of respect there and I was able to kind of sneak it. I don't think I won that. Like, I don't think I was like pulling away winning that. I think I went in there like a little bit nervous, and I also had a couple little things that I wasn't massively confident in, but I was able to get away with it. And I was like, no, I got away with that one kind of thing, rather than think like, oh, I can't believe I won that so well. So things like that, you're like, okay, you don't know anyone's situation. So you should never give respect to someone that's done something in the past that, you know, they haven't shown in the last 24 hours. So yeah, that's just a big thing mentality wise for me. And also, like, if you want to break through and beat people that you shouldn't beat, you can never respect them that much. Like, you can always like respect their achievements, but like from gun to tape, it's a war. It's a battle out there for sure.
That's a massive point. That's a massive takeaway. And you know, on racing, your race execution, mate, is, you know, we talk about respect, but you know, it's incredible. You know, you seem to always get it right on race day. You know, are we allowed to ask, like, how, like, do you go in with a plan into every race? Do you break a race down, or do you just rely on like instinct during the race?
Yeah, I think, you know, it changes as time goes, and it definitely depends on what race. Like, for every race that you guys have probably watched this year, there's been a plan. Like, but there's definitely some races you just have to be a bit more fluid. Every round of the Olympics, every round of the British Champs, like, there was a plan A, plan B, plan C, plan D. We had hundreds of plans. Like, if you don't break down these races and allow yourself to have all these different options, you're just not gonna, you might panic at points because you never really know what's gonna happen in 1500. Like, in an 8, you can kind of gather what's gonna happen, but 15, you're like, never really know. And so for the Olympics, plan A, or for the final anyway, was plan A was to be as mid-pack as possible early and then do exactly what I did, which was just move through the pack really well and don't let the top guys get too far. All that went out the window within the first lap. And I was like, okay. So it went back to like, okay, what did I do to run 3:31 this year? I knew my splits really well. So like, locked back into those splits. I just, like, after the first lap, the first thing I told myself is, you know how to run under, 3:30, because you dreamt about it for so long and you know the splits like off by heart and you know them every 50 meters. If you can run under 3:30, you will medal in this Olympics. Get to work. And so, like, all it was just like just taking people as slowly as possible and coming around them, making sure I wasn't coming out into lane two in any bends. You might even see like me like kind of put my arm around, coming around people as tightly as possible and just not making any mistakes was just like my big mantra. And I knew that I'd be able to hunt down like the top three. So it's hard though, man, like being able to like internally go like, okay, I just need to run under 3:30, because we'd had such a grueling like 5-6 days and it was just like, this is it. And this is why I think, like, you know, we broke the Olympic record, yeah, but that race was so tough, because I mean, I ran 3:36, 3:32, 3:29 within like 5 or 6 days. And it's just like, afterwards I was like, why are people still racing? Like, how can you do that? It makes no sense in my head. So those were kind of the plans. British Champs was, again, straight out the window. I was like, I'm going to stay relaxed here. I feel really good. I'm going to close hard. And I really wanted to win British Champs. And I know Whiteman did as well. Because I feel like both of us felt pretty confident we're going to make the team. But like, winning a British Champs makes, like, it's quite a big deal. And so, like, it's weird because we're really good friends. But it's like, I really wanted to win and I know he really, really wanted to win. And so it was just like this thing that we were just like kind of going man to man on, which was, it is a lot of fun.
I mean, that home straight was incredible for his champs. In many ways, it was just as good as the Olympics because, like you said, you could tell you how much you both wanted it.
Yeah. It was just like, I feel like when I came the back stretch, like I moved up, my goal was not to hit the front and push. My goal was to like kind of sit on the shoulder of like Hayward, but I was moving and I was like, I think these guys are like kind of going for it. And I feel like I'm moving past them quite easily. I was like, you know what? I'm just going to send it. Mm-hmm. So I was like, I'm just going to put my head down and get to work. I think my brother was like 100 to go. He was like sitting there like shouting at me. And I was like, I just can't lose it. And so my coach said, he's going to come back at you with like 50 to go. So try and see if you can hold one more gear and see if you can like ruin his momentum. And I was like, okay. And so I was just waiting for him. I was like, I know he's coming. Just wait. And so he came and I was like, oh God, this gear is just not giving me much more. And then I just threw the chest at it. And I was like, I was pumped, man, to be honest. I was pretty pumped. And it was like, I look back and I was like, I was really pumped and I almost think it's disrespectful of how pumped I was, but it wasn't because, it was mostly because I made the Olympic team, to be honest. But it was also like being Jake Wyman is like hard, really, really hard. And so it was like all the passion and training and hard work, like kind of accumulated into one moment there. So it was pretty cool.
I think that's the things we as fans kind of want to see, though. Like, we want the fact that winning British champs is hard, just improves the sport massively. Like, you three have shown, obviously yourself, Whiteman and Hayward have shown, like making the final this year, that British champs podium for the 1500 is world class. So it was just so great to see, like, from our perspective as fans. And I think that showed in your passion as well. Like, I think it's always great when beating your rivals means a massive deal, and it, I guess it shows respect to them as well.
Yeah, like I knew how good he is, and we constantly go through the year being like, okay, like this is how we're going to race things because it plays into our hands a bit better, and this and the next thing. But like, we get to British champs, and like me and Jake are just like kind of shooting shit, like we're bantering each other, but not like even like mean bantering. We're just like kind of. I think he asked me something, and it made me feel really uneasy, and I told him about it. At the Olympics, he goes, do you know, like, are you going to go to Fawn after this? Or, like, where are you flying out to Tokyo before we'd rest? And I was like, no, something before. Like, is he being pre-selected? And he'll pretend that he didn't, but I know he did. And I was sitting there and I was like, Because we still had five guys with the qualifying time.
Yeah.
And so it was like, to me, I was like, you got to execute. Like, you can't take this for granted. Like, you got it. Like, I was going in with a really war mentality. And Whiteman was like, I don't font. Like, I don't know where I'm going to fly to Tokyo from. I was like, this guy already has been selected. Like, And so that rocked me a little bit. And I was like, okay, I was like, I can't think like that. Mm. But like, if he's getting selected, does that mean I'm getting pre-selected? I don't know. So yeah, like, it was fun though. It was fun. But I do enjoy racing him. It's hard though. And so I don't race him a ton, but you know, I'm sure we'll have some pretty solid battles over British champs every year.
Yeah, do you know what? It's fascinating to hear that, like, you know, like the little mind games, and even in the race, you know, when you're racing, there's little mind games that I feel like you only truly get, you know, at that level when there's that much at stake. Because I feel like, you know, when you're that sub elite, there's never enough at stake to play these games properly. Do you know what I mean? Maybe I'm being unfair, but. But look, I mean, a little bit more in your NCAA career, mate. Like, you know, I feel like after that win indoors, and one thing they do in the NCAA is massively is hype people up, you know. And do you feel that prepared you to be able to deal with pressure a little bit? Because I almost feel like, you know, NCAA kids and college athletes, they get more pressure than most professionals.
Yeah, no, it's the same with all college sports here. Like, more people watch football than they do professional, like NFL here, and it's just because you can follow these teams and they have great coverage. And so when I won NCAAs, I had to take myself home and I was like, if I want to make good money, like if I want to get a good contract, you just can't lose. You can't lose now.
Yeah,
like that's the problem. Like conference regionals, like Brian Clay, Azusa, like any race you run now, you can't lose. Because you need that spotlight on you to get good contracts over here. And so I was like, if I can just win for the next year, I can sign like a good contract that I'd be happy with. And so like, that was my big goal. Like, just don't lose. And so we went to outdoors, or no, we ran Azusa and I ran like, I just dipped under the world qualifying. And then I won outdoors, like just, and I was like, okay, I got away with that one. And then kind of and then we went to indoors again. It didn't go amazingly. I had that problem with my stomach. And then I was like, just can't lose. Like I was for indoors, like, I don't know if people watched it or not, but I ran the DMR, distance medley relay, which is like, for people who don't know, you run your teammate runs a 1200, hands over to someone and runs 400, hands it to someone who runs 800, and then hands someone who runs the 1600. And so I opted in to run the 1600 like at nationals, and like we were playing mind games with other teams, like pretending I wasn't running and stuff like that. And then ended up running, and I had this really bad stomach cramp, so I like strained something in my like oblique, and it was really sore. And so I ended up being like last or whatever, and I was like, damn, I've ruined like my whole career. Like I was really annoyed with it, and turned up the next day, warm up, and it was still sore. And I was like, coach, I'm not running. And he was like, he told me you can't lose, so I'm gonna make you run. And I was like, fair enough. And spoke to my parents, they're like, you gotta run. And I was like, right, okay. And so they were like, just keep pushing the pace. That's all you need to do. You'll break them. And I was like, right, okay. So that's what I ended up doing, and I was able to win. But then people were still a little bit annoyed, but it brought some controversy. So people, the spotlights are still on. But yeah, I mean, people care, man. People really care about NCAA sports, and I think it's a really cool system to have. But yeah, it is a lot of pressure for sure.
Yeah, and I feel like that's. Would you say that's helped you in your professional career? You know, when you go into British champs now, you know how to deal with that spotlight and that pressure, you know, deal with throwaway comments in the cool room and stuff like that.
Yeah, definitely. Especially if you've been racing the likes of Engels, man. Cause he put out a flow track video pretty much like, I'm going to be ready for you in this that next. And I'm like, oh mate, I've already beat you at this point. But yeah, it definitely does. Because you get put in so many of those situations, like even conference, like, for us, like our conference in Mountain West is not massively difficult, or it wasn't massively difficult, but it's still like you had to run around about 340 to 345 to win the race. And so it was just like, you got to go out and win that one. You've got to go to regionals. You got to win that one. You got to run Brian Clay. You got to win that one. You got to win your first run. Like, it was just constantly like, oh, like Josh is now running this race. Like, and then it's like, oh, I can't lose. So yeah, definitely. You just get put in those scenarios. And that's what the NCAA brings. It's like, how can you constantly be put in situations that you're going to be put in as a professional and deal with the problems that you're going to have and learn about issues you're going to have and be able to just learn yourself a little bit more, to be honest.
For sure. You've obviously mentioned kind of almost how tough and grueling the NCAA system is in terms of the pressures and things, but it's also very, I guess, lucrative if you can be successful in it. And obviously you came out pretty well after your college career and managed to sign a professional contract. Were you always planning to stay in the US? Obviously, you signed with Brooks and stayed there. Was that always the plan, or did you kind of consider other options like coming back to the UK and things like that?
So I wasn't planning on coming out of college until I was like pretty much told that I had a contract. And so at the start of my my junior year, or the second semester of my junior year. So if I finished that semester, I was going into my senior year. The Brooks Beast like come to Albuquerque to train, and that's obviously where University of New Mexico is. And so they were like, my coach was like, hey, like this professional team wants to sit down with you. Like, would you be up for it? I was like, yeah, definitely. And we kind of discussed it with like the head of marketing, the director of marketing, and the coach, Danny, and we sat down, and they were like, yeah, we're really interested in you. Like, this is what we can offer. Like, we're like, not money, you're not allowed to show how much money you're going to offer, but like, they're like, you know, we have this team and this is what we do, and this is our setup, this is our coach, this is the next thing. And so that started in January, and so I was like, oh, like I can't muck this one up. Like, they're pretty much saying, we got a contract on the table, either run really, like, we're probably going to sign you regardless how the year goes, but if you run well, it's going to change the numbers pretty much. So that was kind of the big goal all the way throughout the year. And I wasn't really thinking about any other brands. I was like, well, this brand seems really cool. It seems very personal. The coach seems fantastic. Like, this seems like the move. Met with the team. I was like, this is pretty cool. And then ran into Blaze and was handed the contract. And I was like, okay, like, this is a great contract. I'm happy with it. I was kind of ready to sign it. And then it was like, oh, well, we might look around a little bit just to, you know, make sense of it. But the contract was great. And we just went for it. And I kind of just didn't look back a little bit, to be honest, because it was the same situation when I came to University of Mexico. It was like, I didn't need to visit Seattle. I didn't need to see what the Brooks HQ was like. You get a gut feeling with certain things. And the Beast was like, okay, this makes sense. The coach is fantastic. And that's really all that matters. Like, as long as the coaches, for me, first of all, no allegations of any misconduct, number one. And then two, like, does he know how to make an athlete successful? And so he's a very personal coach. Like, he's younger. And he was like, all right, like, this is what we're going to do. This is how I feel like we're going to, you know, become the best in the world. And I was like, if you think I can be the best in the world, then you're going to be my coach. Because if I don't have a coach that can think that, then I'm never going to get there. So, yeah, and that's kind of why I chose the Brooks Beast. So I never really looked into the UK options, but I wasn't really given the chance. But also, my missus is over here and kind of started building my life over here. And the US contracts are definitely more lucrative than the UK ones. And so it just made more sense to go with what I was handed.
You know what, like, I remember when you signed and, you know, I was like, I think me and Ollie were like, wow, like, he's gone with Brooks. Because not many people, there wasn't much diversity in the sport then. I don't think anyway, you know, 4 or 5 years ago, it was kind of Nike or Adidas and companies like Brooks and New Balance. They had this image of maybe they had good athletes, but they never had the ones making teams and stuff. Do you know what I mean? And I almost feel like, you know, names like yourself and like Whiteman, you've paved the way for that diversity now. Would you agree? I think
the more brands we can bring into this sport, the more money we're going to have and the more options we're going to have. So, like, if the two options were Nike or Adidas, if Nike are offering you, say, 50, Adidas are like, oh, we're going to offer you 55. You know, I'm going to go Adidas. Mm-hmm. What if New Balance was there? Brooks were there. On were there. Like, all these other brands that are like, we want this athlete. We're gonna give them more. Mm-hmm. And like, every brand has different kind of different points of their contract. So some have reduction clauses, some don't. Like, some, you know, some have all these endorsement stuff, but some people don't allow you to have extra endorsement deals. Like, all these stuff, like, where different brands just fit different people. And the more brands we can bring in, the better. Like, I looked at Brooks and they were the best fit for me, hands down. Mm-hmm. It might not be the best fit for everyone, because some people might want, you know, what comes to reduction clauses is just bigger bonuses, pretty much. And so, like, yeah, you can make more, but you also easily could lose more. And so that's just the way I look at it. It's like, if you can bring as many brands as possible, like Puma coming in now in the US, they just made a group. It's like, that's great. Like, give the athletes more options and don't, like, only give them like two options, because it really sucks not having like the options that you hope are there. So that was just the big thing for me. And also, like, Brooks weren't a fancy brand when I signed. Like, it's not like they have these fancy clothes or shoes that everyone's like raving about. The shoes are so good. Like, they are hands down the best trainers I've ever put on. And yes, I get paid to say that, but like, I'm genuinely serious about it. And like, I get my buddies at home to jump in some Brooks and like, oh, like that's crazy. I didn't realize Brooks actually made good running shoes. It's like, Brooks's battle is, if you can get someone in a Brooks running shoe, they'll stay in it. Like, that's kind of the big thing. And so that's kind of what I learned about the company. Like, we kind of learn as we go, and, you know, we're involved in kind of the corporate side as much as possible as well. Like, we're in the HQ, like, most days, getting lunch, speaking to, like, you know, I was, you know, on a Zoom call with the CEO and CFO yesterday. Like, we're just constantly kind of getting mixed up with the employees. And it's just like, it's a lot of fun. It's like really fun to be involved in a company that know your name pretty much.
Yeah. And I think with the success you guys have had at the Beast, you know, over the past years, I think you've inspired companies like On as well to do what they're doing in Boulder, you know, because I think they've seen, oh, we can make a really good go of this. This can be huge.
Yeah, I think, you know, if you can get good athletes off the rip like On did, and, you know, they're signing NCAA champs. Like, I think when the Brooks Beast started, we were signing like you know, fourth and fifth placers, because we didn't really have the money or the pool to do that. But now people have gone, you know, all that really matters is the coach. If you have a good coach and you get one good athlete, people would love to go there. So On have done a really good job of getting really, really good athletes just off the rip. And so they've had major success, and Dathan's over there coaching. So yeah, that's the way it goes. Like, why not? Like, get a good coach and get any shoe brand. And you guys get a shoe brand that works, like wants to work with the athletes to create better spikes, create better trainers. And I think On are a great example of that. And so now the Brooks Beasts are like having to turn people away that are really, really good runners. And that's a pretty cool setup, to be honest. And I hope that continues. And I hope Brooks get a bit of a team and a brand in the UK, because we have an office over in the UK. And I was working with them when I came back home a little bit in some events. It's like, obviously they don't have the money that the US side has, but it's like, grab a couple of athletes, get them in the Brooks shoes, get some gear out there and just trust that, you know, people are going to love the product pretty much. And I think they will.
Mm. Yeah, 100%. You've obviously mentioned kind of your coach, Danny Mackie, already a fair bit, but let's chat about that a bit more. How long did it take for you guys to click? Because I presume from the results, they speak for themselves in that it has clicked and it is working down there. So was it kind of an instant thing? Like, you knew straight away, this is the guy and I was going to get on well with it, I guess.
He is the man. I will say he's a man. He just, I don't know. Like, so we did our first year athlete coach, like fully at like distance, because I was still in university in New Mexico. And so when the team came over to Albuquerque, like I would train obviously with the team and Danny would be there. But we did like full first year at distance. And I took that as a massive responsibility. Like, this company's paying me money to run in their, like run their stuff. They're also paying me money and trusting me to be where I am at a distance from the team. So I was working so hard and I was phoning them like most days, and we would just learn each other. And I feel like that's why our relationship is so good. It's like a girlfriend, man. Like, if you have distance from a girlfriend, then you guys are meeting up and you're going to be cool gel when you get there. So, so now that we work on a day-to-day basis, like face-to-face, like we know each other so well. I'm like, Danny, I want to do this. He's like, okay, well, this is why I think we should do that. Or we just talk all the time. And he really respects my ideas and I respect his, and he's a nerd. So he kind of knows the science behind most of the training that we do. So I kind of just trust that. And if you can have a coach that you trust on a start line, like if you can like wholeheartedly say that I am in the best position possible because my coach knows what he's doing, then you're just going to have confidence through the roof. And that's like what I've believed throughout my whole career. Like, any coach that I've had throughout my whole career, like I've always had confidence. It's almost like a blind faith, like a blind confidence. Sometimes I probably shouldn't have had as much confidence, but because I did, I'd kind of just bullshit myself into thinking how good I was. And so that kind of helps as well. But yeah, I mean, I love working with Danny, and I think I'm looking to hopefully make him my coach for the rest of my career. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah, that's brilliant. And like the group dynamic, you know, you talk about, you know, being at a distance there, and then obviously you know, you're finally meeting up with the group. And shout out to Athlete Special. We saw a little bit of that group dynamic this year on YouTube as well. And, you know, how important is that for an elite athlete like yourself trying to really get to that next level, which is, you know, Olympic medals?
Yeah, the group's great, but the group's changing always because it's difficult because you've got a brand that wants to sign great athletes and things like that. And so so sadly, we don't have the Athlete Special anymore. So it's much better. And I'm terrible at social media, so you'll hardly see stuff from me. I'll try and get better at it, but it's so boring.
You're doing, mate, you're doing good.
Yeah, so but yeah, I think being able to train, you know, I think we're signing some really good guys this year. We signed Waleed for the 1500, we signed Devin Dixon for the 800. We've obviously got the likes of Henry Wynn, who ran a PB this year, fifth at USA's. And it's just like, I love training with guys that are really good, and they all train so much better than I do. I'm not like an amazing trainer, especially this time of year. Like, I got my ass kicked yesterday, which was very humbling. But yeah, it's just like, we all train to a similar level. Like, I feel like my race experience and what I've done since I was in the sport from 9 years old is the reason that I'm able to kind of push to those faster times and those better results. But those guys hand it to me in practice all the time, and that's always really fun to know that I'm just pushing the boundaries with those guys. So yeah, having a great team around you is so important.
Is it true that Danny runs the group sessions before you guys do it?
Yeah, he hasn't done it in the winter yet, but he does it mostly in the summer. He's a bit of a he struts his stuff, man. He's jacked, and that's the problem. Like, he does like jujitsu and stuff like that, and I also keep my shirt on because he's just like great shirt off in our sessions. But yeah, he like if we're doing a new session, like if he knows the session well, he might do something a little bit different, but he'll still do it. But like if we're running like a new session or something like that, like he'll jump on the track and try it out and see what the effects are on him, and it kind of like helps him know what splits we need to run and how much effect it's going to have on us. But it's the same with like our nutritionist. Like our nutritionist is, I want to say early 40s, two kids. He's a professor at a university in Oregon. And he lives and trains like us pretty much. And so if he ever asks us to take a supplement, he'll be already taking it. He's like, this is the effects it has on me. Like, this is what we think. Like, yeah, our recovery protein shakes. And he's just constantly doing research. So those are the people I want on my team, the people that live it. They don't just say it like, oh, I've read the research and stuff like that. I don't want you to read research. I want you to do it. Tell me what happens to you, and then I'll do it. And so that's kind of the way that our team works, which is a lot of fun. So, yeah, our nutritionist, Dr. Kyle, is pretty cool in that way as well. Danny just, yeah, he's always running around. He told me he was running yesterday, and he was posting on Instagram. So bullshit me sometimes, but yeah. He's pretty fit too.
Wow, that's next level. And I suppose, you know, that's the advantage maybe coaches who have, you know, been good runners themselves have. You know, one of the few advantages they have is they know, like you say, they can do a session and they know maybe how that session will affect you for the rest of the week. So, you know, what the rest of the week may look like, you know, and if he's doing it there and then he has even more of a better understanding.
Yeah, guys are not, I don't know. Like I thought I wanted to be a coach, but I know I'd be a bad coach if I was like having to coach like him. I'm like, if I want to be a coach, I want to be a guy that's like Nick Willis's coach that just brings donuts to practice, stands in the middle of just holding a stopwatch and shouts at people. So, but yeah, it's definitely a new level.
It's fascinating to see, you know, like you say, Nick Willis's coach who is you know old, just stands with a stopwatch. You know, the different coaching styles. That arise, but I do like the way from what you've described Danny Mackey, because I feel like if you're a professional athlete, you need the coach to meet you on that professionalism.
Yeah, oh for sure. And I think it all stops at what coach you're getting coached at, and it's just for Danny, yeah, like I said, it was just like a gut feeling when we started working together, and then we just clicked straight away. Very like he gives a lot. Like he's like he just wants like you can see passion in him so much, and sometimes he's over passionate like we are sometimes. Like when we race bad, he has a bad week. When we race great, he has the best week of his freaking life. So like he's just so invested. And if you have a coach that almost to a fault is just like rides that whole career with you, like you're gonna have a good time.
Mm-hmm. Look, let's talk about Tokyo then. Now one of the biggest things, you know, for us is you didn't race for, was it 6 weeks since British Champs?
I didn't race in between British and Tokyo. I mean, I battled Danny on that for a while. I didn't want to race. I was like, the two things can happen when you race. And I had spoke to Whiteman about this because I was like, I know one of them happened to him. I was like, I know you were in a really hard training block and you went and tried to race in a way that you don't normally race, which is like pushing from the front, trying to grab a time. And I didn't want to get my confidence knocked because I knew how hard I had to train in between the British Champs in Tokyo. But I didn't, at the same time, I wanted to train really hard, but at the same time, I knew I was fit. So I didn't need to do anything crazy. It's like, turn up to the start line injury free and you're going to have a good go at it. And so, yeah, I was like, Danny, I don't want to race. He's like, really? I was like, yeah, I don't want to race. And so we learned from the first rounds at normal places is like, we need to have one really hard effort before we start. And like, all right, okay. So I flew over to LA some of the beefs were racing there, and the race director is a good friend of mine as well, and he's like, do you want to race? I was like, nah, not really. So I was just gonna do an eight, and so we just did like an 800 like time trial. And he's like, can I at least film it for my social? I was like, yeah, that's fine. So I think that's up on social media somewhere. But I think we went out to dinner, and Danny spoke to Robbie Andrews, like, you know, do you want to jump in on this workout and help him pace a little bit? And he's like, yeah, definitely. And Robbie Andrews is a legend, and really helped me on that day. And so I think the goal was to run, you know, 54 point in the first lap of the 800, and then just close as hard as possible. I think around 54, and then like 50 points. I think so. It was like 140. I don't know what it was. I don't remember, but I closed as hard as I could, man. And so I was really happy with that. And then we did a 300 at like 37. And that was my day. And I was like, that's great. And then, you know, obviously it didn't help the first round. So yeah, that's all I can say.
No, but that, I mean, Lum, you could probably back me. That's an interesting point because yeah, when Whiteman, would he get third or fourth at Gateshead Diamond League?
Yeah.
It was a bit like, ooh, how's that going to affect him going into the Olympics? So it's interesting to see from an athlete perspective like yourself, you know, weighing up the pros and cons of racing and not racing. Because some people, they need to race, you know, to keep confidence, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Like, except like Elliot Giles, like he's constantly racing. And I think I wouldn't be able to do it, but he's obviously like, that's where he is. Like, he's just like bulletproof in that way. Like, he just goes out races, like good, bad, ugly, whatever it is. Like, he'll just get up. Then 2 days later, he seems to be in a race somewhere else in Europe running 800. I'm like, I don't know how you do it, mate. Genuinely, I raced, I think, 9 times this year, and 5 of them were championship races. So that's just the way that I kind of roll with it. But yeah, that's just for me. It's like, I love, like, if you ever see me race, I am 100% fit, and that race is really important to me. That's just the way I like to do it. So, like, I feel like it's the same. It's like, if you ever see Josh Garrett on a start list, like, you should watch that race because he's ready to race, kind of thing. Because I hate losing. I really do. And I have to learn how to lose now properly. Like, me and Danny had that conversation. It's like, we can't be scared to lose now. Like, we've got to go out and battle. Like, I had a good talk with Ollie Hora and the night after the final of Tokyo, and we're like, let's sync up our calendar a bit better, because we would have battled a lot better this year and helped each other a lot more this year if we'd kind of, we were like racing like a week apart, and a lot of times, like, let's sync those up a little bit better and just battle. And so that's kind of the big thing that we're looking at now, to be honest.
Wow. So we're going to be spoiled with some good races.
Hopefully. We'll see.
Yeah. On that then, on the syncing up, I hope you don't mind me saying, but I seem to recall there was, I think, some athletes in the US almost called you out for not doing certain races and wanting to run quick at certain places rather than others. Do you have, like, I guess, an opinion on that in terms of, yeah, just people being, I don't know, making complaints for no reason, it seemed a bit like.
Yeah, it's funny, man. It was like Central and Angles or something like that. And I was just like, what do you want from me? Are you gonna pay me to come pace you again? Like, you're not gonna beat me, so like, what's the point? You want me to pace you out? Like, I've never lost you, Central, so why are you chirping that kind of thing? So it is funny, man. It's just like, for me, like, what actually happened was I ran the 805K and like double within a week. The 5K just ruined me. And so I needed an extra week to be able to race, because my whole team went and raced. And I said to Danny, I'm like, look, I'm not going to be ready to rip in 3 weeks' time. Like, it's not going to happen, because we want to run a really fast 15. He's like, okay, well, there's actually a meet like 6 days later. Do you want to do that one? I was like, yeah, let's do that one. And so we had booked that like 2 weeks in advance, like, all like no start list came out for the first race, whatever. And then people then caught wind. Or maybe we didn't book it. We told the race director not to tell anyone, because we just want to annoy people. And then it also meant, because I'm pretty much the US pacemaker that goes 1500 over here. So yeah. Whenever anyone sees me race and they're like, oh, you know, we're pretty much getting a pacemaker for 1500 if we can keep up. And so I was just like, let those guys race if they want to race that weekend. And if they want to come back and race me again 5-6 days later, that's fine. But I really want to get the US soil record. And so like we kind of discussed with the race director, he's like, right, okay, cool, that sounds good. And so that's kind of what we did. And then yeah, like they ran like a good time. Like they ran like 3:33, I think it was one in, and then there was a bunch of 3:34s, whatever. And I was just like, okay, great, that sounds good. I was at a brewery when I was watching, like drinking a beer, and I was like, I should probably stop drinking this beer. Because like they'd been giving me this like all week, and I was like, because that was the race that Hayward and Gricey, I think, got the qualifying time.
Yeah,
they had to work as well. Champ's annoying, you know. Mm-hmm. So that's the, I was like, all right, so I need to get to work here. So we ended up racing obviously 6 days later and just went for it. But people just want to like round me up sometimes, and I'll give into it. It's a lot of fun, especially when they lose all the time. That's always fun as well.
Well, I think like you mentioned how it's fun and it's good to see. I think it's good for the sport that there are more of these rivalries rather than just thinking this is athletics and we have to be politically correct, I guess, all the time and things like that. And you see it so much in other sports. And it's good to see these kind of spats on Twitter and Instagram. And obviously speaking to you about it now, you can tell it's all kind of in good jest and things like that. So I think it's just good to see.
Yeah, I think, you know, like someone like Engels, like I enjoy spending time with him. I think he's like a good buddy, but we'll always take little jabs at each other because there's an underlying, like we built this thing in college, like head to head. We build this kind of rivalry, and so that's always going to be there. But like, I think he said something on a podcast once. He was drinking a beer on a podcast with like Eric Jenkins, and he like called me out for like being fat or something like that. And everyone was like going crazy on Twitter. And my teammates told me, we were in the gym at the time. My teammate was like, "Oh, like Engels, I called you fat." Everyone's going mental on Twitter. And I looked at my phone and I had texted Mangles, been like, "Hey man, I didn't mean that. I'm really sorry." And I was like, "Don't worry about it, fella. I'm not gonna respond." He's like, "Okay, lads. I had a couple too many beers the next thing." So that's just kind of the way it works sometimes.
Yeah, man. I mean, how do you respond to like negative comments like that? Because you know, I've heard commentators in the past, you know, comment on your physique and stuff. And if it was a female, man, you know, stuff would be kicking off. So it's interesting to see how, you know, a guy like yourself, you seem very like reassured in your own ability, which I think is key. Obviously, you have to be at your level. But it would be interesting to know, you know, how you do respond to comments like that.
I found out like a year ago that the most Google search Josh Kerr was what is Josh Kerr's weight? And I was like, this is pretty funny. And so what I've found is people just don't get it. Like the people who have won 1500s and like the physique of a 1500 meter runner is not what I look like, right? I've shown you that you can run under 3:30 and you can medal at the Olympics looking like this. And so I believe personally that people have been kicked out of this sport and kind of been left out of this sport because of the way that they look, and they worry that they couldn't make it to the top. Like for me, I was worried when I was a kid. I was like, oh, like I'm built a little more like a rugby player. Like maybe that's just the path I go down. I watched Andy Vernon run cross at Liverpool and I was like, nah, I got a future in this. And hopefully I'm that Andy Vernon for people. Like, look, don't battle your body. Like your body is going to do what your body does. And you know, you just got to, like, for me, I am much stronger than a lot more people. I can be quicker. My jump, like I can turn speed a lot quicker and I don't get injured as much. I'm thick boned. So my consistency brings me some great results. And so if you can look at your own body, like whatever benefits you the best, like that's what you stick with. Don't try and be that cookie cutter person that's winning the Olympics every year. Yeah, it's just like even the 1500 now is like we're more strength guys, like we're taller and we're just like a bit bigger and run the 5k a bit better, and that's what makes a good 1500 meter runner right now. But in 5 years time it might change. And so yeah, I do find it quite funny, and if I wasn't successful then I might take it a little bit harsher. But and so I do like feel for people that do get those comments and aren't finding success. But yeah, the people always have to find like your weaknesses somewhere, and if someone's trying to find your weakness, that means they're worried about something. So that's the way I look at it.
That's a huge takeaway. And I feel like, you know, it's not to say that, you know, you know, I've been told, you know, that you're very professional, you know, you take your diet seriously, you know, and especially going into a game, you know, you're watching what you're drinking, you're watching what you're eating. You know, so it's not to say you're unprofessional in any sense, you know, eating wise, it's just, you know, your body is what it is, isn't it?
Yeah, that's the way it goes. Like from January through the major, I'm pretty locked in. The fall's a bit of fun. But you know, it's just, yeah, it's, you got to know what makes your body tick. And my nutritionist knows my body really well. Danny knows my body really well. I know my body really well. And so we know what it takes to run under 330, and we know what it takes to medal. So you just got to learn your own body in that situation. But yeah, if you ask my teammates, they'll say I'm not very strict with myself, but I know what makes my body tick. So that's all I need to know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, let's get back to Tokyo because we sidetracked a little bit. But yeah, heat one, obviously well documented. Were you sick in your heat?
I was sixth or seventh. I think I might have been seventh.
Yeah. Did it hit you at that point? Were you like, oh shit, this is the Olympic Games?
Yeah, I had a really, so this goes back to British champs. Like I actually had a really bad first round of British champs, and if you watch the end of it, I don't know what kind of media like took the, grabbed the image of me like finishing crossing the finish line in the first round, kind of laughing. I looked back and like smiled and laughed a little bit. And they're like, oh, Josh must be feeling great. But what actually happened, I was like, oh, I'm going to make it through. Thank fuck for that. I just didn't feel good that day. And it's something we're looking into quite deeply now. It's like, I wasn't able to travel and race that first round all that well this year. And, you know, I didn't feel great. I made massive mistakes in that first round. And I had to take that home and really think about it. But it made me laser focused, man. Like, it was like, you take nothing for granted. This, you could be on the first flight home right now, but you're allowed to run the second round. But there was a lot of embarrassment there. Like, I was obviously giving it big ins. Like, I was really fit. I was like, I think I can win. I think I can medal. This is nice thing. And everyone, like, the first interview question I got when I finished was like, so do you think you're like quite deluded? Because you've been coming out and saying you're going to win, and it looks like you're going to get knocked out in the first round. And I was like, oh, this is so embarrassing. Like, this is the worst thing ever. And it just made me go, you know what, like, this is going to be a hell of a story, like nearly getting rocked out in the first round and coming out and winning or getting a medal. So that was kind of that embarrassment changing into anger, changing into like laser focus, man. And so every step was like, you're here for a job, do your job, you're fit, you're ready, and just go grab it. So the second round was a little bit more, I was more aggressive. I was smarter. I felt a lot better. But it was also an incredibly hard round. Like, we broke the Olympic record in the second round. So, you know, it was one of those things. My coach was like, do you think you could have sprinted a little bit faster? Like, do you think you could have won that heat? And I was like, I really don't know. I was working hard for sure. Got through that one. And then it was just like, you know, this is the story. This is the goal you've had since 4 days ago. Like, you wanted to be in this position. So yeah, that was the way I looked at it. But it was a really rough experience, man. Like, that 24, 48 hours that I had, I was on the phone constantly. Like, I was speaking to my mindfulness coach, I was speaking to my parents, I was speaking to Danny, I was speaking to everyone. I was like, shit, man, like, that was so bad. Like, have I lost all of my ability within like a day? And they're like, no, like, they brought me back to like where I should have been at the start. But but yeah, it was, you know who your close friends are in those situations.
Yeah, wow. Like, obviously, so you mentioned you use a mindfulness coach there. Is that something that's been throughout since all the time with the beast and stuff, or is it more recent?
I started working with him in January of this year, and we worked on a week or bi-weekly basis, just working on my mind, just working on being ready for whatever's thrown at me, through meditation, through loads of different stuff. And he's helped me massively. If you're a professional athlete at any level and you don't work with some sort of psychologist, mindfulness coach, life coach, whatever, you're doing something wrong. Like, they can bring massive, massive improvements to your career. And it's the reason I was able to deal with that first round and be able to come out positively. I was on the phone with him for a while after that. And just go back to what we worked with all year. You know, we're happy that we're there. We're enjoying the experience. And you just let it go. I wrote all my problems out from that day. Wrote them all out. Scrunched up the piece of paper and fucking booted it off. booted it off the balcony. I was like, that's done. We're moving on. Next round's coming up in a day. So, yeah, I genuinely believe that he's made a massive difference in my career. I mean, my parents have kind of been my psychologist, mindfulness coaches throughout my life, but having someone specifically for that job and a fantastic man that I have is it makes a world of difference in my opinion.
Yeah, I want to be that guy picking up that piece of paper you kicked off the balcony. That could be worth something.
Hopefully no one read that one.
Yeah, I think that's why it'd be so interesting. But look, and then you kind of went strength to strength in the semis. And, you know, you talk about mindfulness. Obviously, Whiteman's semi was incredible. And what's it like, you know, going into a final? How do you prepare after you've seen, you know, people run in their semis? And I think Hayward, again, you know, he went on to run a PB in a good time. And so did yourself, you know. How are you preparing, you know, the day before that final?
I just realized that, to be honest, I think that the slate is clean after the first two rounds because of how hard they are.
Okay.
Like if we went 340, 337, like then you can look at the guys that are looking good. But having that 5K strength makes a massive difference in those rounds. But what I will say from a Hayward point of view, he was awesome. He was really, really good at the Olympics. Like he was super relaxed and his coach was there, Mark Rowland. He was professional, man. Like he was really, really good. And I think he learned so much. And that's why I was worried that he might have not been selected. After coming third at the trials, I was like, if I didn't go to London 2017, I would not have come sixth in 19. And then I probably wouldn't have medaled this year. And so when I saw that he was third, I was like, I really hope he goes because he needs that experience right now because he could be a medalist in the next two world championships. He's that good. And so that was really cool. And then Whiteman's the same. Like he looked so good in those first two rounds and he might be just missing a little bit of strength. I know he was kind of annoyed about that. But again, like you can't fault someone not having their best race in that last round because it was so intense. It was so fast. Like you had to be 100% on that day. And that's the way it goes. And that's why it's so exciting to watch. But you know, I know he was disappointed. I know he was a bit upset, but I know that's just going to fuel his fire. And that's kind of, for me, it's like, I need to have that mentality of, you know, what can I bring next year that's different? What can I look at that might be a weakness for me? Because I know he's doing the same thing right now to battle me next year. So yeah, he's obviously still a massive threat. And it could, that's the thing I said, is like, it could have been either of us. And I obviously really, really happy and proud it was me, but If Whiteman was up on that medal stand in third place, like no one would have batted an eyelid. Really, no one would have. And so, though, you know, he's medaled at commies and Euros and stuff all that in the past. So I know he's good enough to do that. So yeah, the UK 1500 meters, man, it's an era like no else, I would say.
It really is.
Yeah, 100%. On the race itself, then, like you touched upon earlier about kind of pushing it on and knowing the splits. Have you watched the race back much?
Yeah, I have actually. And I was speaking to Danny about it yesterday. I was like, if we're going to try and run as fast as we want to next year, you're going to have to not tell me the splits because the splits start becoming pretty disgusting at some point. Like, as we were talking about, we're like, if they're going after the world record next year, they need to run 325 point something. And I was like, don't tell me the splits because I don't want to hear them. Like, they sound horrible, man. They're so much easier than what they sound like when you're in that moment. And yeah, like learning your splits, knowing your splits from a young age, like if you can, if you know how to run splits, you're going to be much more successful. And if you don't, get a watch, get your coach to kind of help with that and learn what every split feels like. And I feel like I do that quite well here as well in training, but yeah, man, it makes a massive difference in your career if you know how to do that. But that's just the way I went. I was like, you know what? These are the splits I need to hit. Go and hit them and see what kind of damage you can do to this field.
You look at it and think, if it was 1,501 meters, you may have had a silver medal.
I know, like, so that's like the big thing that people keep saying is like, you know, you could have got second. I was like, I could have got fourth, man. I really could have. Like, if I had been too eager and gone out into lane two and went for second, like, I could have blown up. Kipsan could have smelled blood and come after me. Like, the only reason he gave up is because he knew he wasn't beating me and he knew he wasn't getting caught. He could have pushed a lot more to that line if he really wanted to. But yeah, I think that's a little fun thing. Someone messaged me on Instagram recently being like, how much slower do you think you are with the gold chain? I was like, definitely 0.05 at least. So, but yeah, I think, you know, that's the sport, you know, the 0.0s of a second are what, you know, what can change your life. So yeah, we're trying to find those 0.0s right now.
Yeah. And you know, on that final, you know, you touched upon earlier about giving people respect and, you know, and I think the fact Jakob ended up winning and Chariot, you know, was maybe not the Chariot we saw in 2019, say. I think it's a really exciting time for 1500 meter running because now it's been in the question, what the hell's going to happen next year? You know, and
yeah.
what's your focus next year? Have you, because obviously, you know, Commonwealths, I think it got announced you've been picked already, haven't you? So, yeah, what are you prioritizing?
So, I want to be world champ, man. Like, anything but world champ next year would be a disappointment. And that's crazy to say because I'm just trying to get better every year. Like, 2017 was got knocked out in the first round. 2019, I was sixth. 2021, I was third. The normal progression puts me at first next year. I'm sorry, it does. That's in my head, that's my progression. So, yeah, that's the big goal. Like, how can I have a world champ mentality and bring that into the year? But again, Commonwealth Games is a massive deal to me as well. So, how can we have longevity in the season to be able to go out and peak at world champs and then, you know, a couple of weeks later, go out and try and battle pretty similar guys to go and try and get a Commonwealth Games gold medal as well. But, you know, those are my goals. I want to win, man. I was born to win. And anything less than that is definitely a disappointment for me. And so, you know, I'm in Seattle right now, like Eugene, Oregon's, you know, 3-4 hours down the road. I'm able to have my family that have got tickets for the world champs. I've got, you know, my whole Brooks HQ will probably be over there. Like, my teammates hopefully will be in the race. Like, my coach will be like, it's going to be such a different atmosphere than Tokyo. And I feel like I want to have that moment with them. I think that's something I want to do in my career where I win something huge and I have the people around me that, that kind of help me get there. So that's going to be, that's my big focus. And then be able to fly home and go and try and see if I can do some damage at commies.
For sure. Obviously, you mentioned kind of the world champs being the main priority, but obviously with the Olympics this year, it gave you a chance to run quick as well. Are there any kind of time goals you have in your career, or is it all focused on the winning the champs and the time will come with that?
Yeah, you're right on that second point. Like, if I never get the British record and I win worlds, like, I would be a much happier man than get the British record and never win a major. But I'm 0.2 away and I'm 24 years old, just turned 24 last week. Like, I can't see me not getting it. And I can't see me not going on to 328.8, in my opinion. Does that get me a British record? I'm not sure, because I think the likes of Whiteman can also push it. So we'll be battling to see who gets it first and then see how low we can get it. So that's going to be the big goal is what kind of stamp can I leave on British 1500 meter running? I want to be the best of the best. I want to win Worlds and Olympic Games, and I want to see how low I can get that British record. But again, I don't know what's humanly and clean possible in the 1500. That's the big question, isn't it? Like, how low can you really physically go? And I think, you know, in a perfect race with perfect pacing, perfect whatever, like, I think I could have run high 327s last year. I don't know if that's it. I think it might have to be. I'm really not sure. So we'll see what ends up happening next year. But I think I can be in the 27s next year.
Mate, we're in one hell of an era right now. And it's just amazing to be watching it, to be honest. Because like you say, you know, British 1500 meter running. And I think even after this podcast, mate, whenever you step on the track, there's going to be people, you know, Josh Kerr fan brigade. But yeah, it's an interesting point. You say, you know, what's, you know, what, how quick can we go clean? And you start to look at that world list, don't you? And you start to look at that all time list and you're going, you know, Kiprop's done, you know, El Guerrouj, huge question marks, but we'll never know. You know, even Lagat, you know, he's had a failed A-sample at some point.
All these guys,
you know, Manango got done, you know, you do begin to, you know, beg the question, you know, it's like, where's the clean line in the sand?
Yeah, that's the kind of question I'm asking myself now, is like, what's my body capable of, like, without breaking, you know?
Yeah.
Like, how fast can I go without breaking? How hard can I train? How good, like, me and Danny were talking yesterday, like, we could like set up some sort of like sub-2-esque attempt at like trying to break, you know, the world record. I was like, I don't know if it's physically possible, Danny, to be honest. Like, I can tell you for a fact, 2:29 wasn't slow. So taking another 3 seconds off that seems quite significant, because I do know what 3:32 feels like, and I know the difference between 3:32 and 3:29, and it's a jump, and it's going to be a heck of a jump to get down to 26. So yeah, we'll see. And hopefully that's what my career can show everyone in the 1500. Like, what is that clean barrier?
Well, the track world would be taken by storm, I think, if we had a Kipchoge-esque 1500 meter attempt. I really do. That's the PR the track world needs, I think.
Yeah, I mean, definitely. The problem is I don't run for that brand. So, you know, can we sign a couple of Ingebrigtsens to the Brooks Beast, and then we can give it a go?
No, I think, yeah, we've just got some fun questions to finish, if that's all right with you. The first one, Matt's written it down. I don't even know if we need to ask you this. Who wins the DMR then, the USA or GB? Because like, we see this on Instagram all the time. And I think we all know the answer, but like, yeah, let's just hear it from you, Josh.
This is the thing, like DMR versus 4x mile is so different. Like DMR, like I'd have to look into, like, because the US have such great 4 and 8 runners. And so that would be difficult.
Yeah.
But I would back the Brits, wouldn't I? Like, let's be honest, like, because the US will have a terrible miler, so we'll catch them.
No, I think, yeah, to be fair, I think Britain do win. It's just the 400 puts a spanner in the works, but
I don't think it takes up enough time to make a difference. Like, the DMR itself is a 12 and a mile, really.
Yeah, it's an interesting point, because obviously America's 400 meter runners, but I think Lum's right, the 1200 leg in the mile is what does the damage.
Well, that's what's going to bring us the win, I think. Yeah, put one on that 12, because he's a lot faster than me.
All right, next question, Ollie.
Yeah, what car do you drive?
I drive a Tesla Model 3. So it's just it seems like the cliche car now that like people who like sign US contracts out here get. And so I know that Ollie Hoare has one now as well, but he got it like a good year after me. So
you paved the way and set the standard.
Exactly. I'll not pretend that I only got one because I was in my teammate Drew Wendell's car, and I was like, this is a fun car to drive, man. It is a lot of fun. I told my brother, like, you need to get one in the UK, but sounds like the charge and stuff over there is difficult. But yeah, man, I'm pretty pumped driving that around.
Yeah, I think we saw on special, I think Drew was getting the car to like pull up right to the track for them to pick him up and stuff from his phone and stuff. So you guys are always all over that, are you?
So again,
you guys always all over that, using it to like
drive. Oh, yeah. Oh, just trying to make every teammate jealous, isn't it? That's all. I guess I'm like idiot. Yeah.
Well, next question.
Yeah, I think we know the answer to this one as well. To be fair, world record or Olympic gold?
Olympic gold, man. That's why I'm here. I love racing those one-off chances.
Yeah, I think our next one's probably, well, tricky. We'll see what you say, but tricky, I think, especially for you, Scott. So Scotland or Great Britain?
This is a bit of an Andy Murray question, stitching him up.
Well, that's tough, man, because like, I think I would prefer to win a world champs over Commonwealth Games, obviously. Mm-hmm. And so that would mean I would put me at like a GB situation. But I haven't ran for Scotland in so long, and I'm so excited to run for Scotland. I don't know, like, there's just something that, like, that team is going to bring, where it's just like, we are a small country and we can compete with the best in the world. And that's just, that's really fun. And I feel it's the same with Team GB, isn't it? Like racing the Americans, but and the Aussies and all that stuff. But yeah, being able to run for Scotland is very cool. So I don't know. I don't know if I can answer that one, to be honest.
Political answer then.
Yeah.
Yeah, rugby or football?
Rugby, man. I love watching my Bristol Bears. My brother plays obviously on that team, so I'm watching it every week. They got a bye week this week, so I didn't get to watch any rugby this week, but they're playing again next week. So yeah, rugby for sure.
Do you have a football team at all?
I don't follow it, man. Like if I'm being honest, I don't have like a team anymore, but I enjoy watching the greats, like being able to watch Ronaldo back. Like I watched his debut. That's really cool. Watching Liverpool seems like a lot of fun. So if they're playing, like I'll turn it on. But I used to be an Arsenal fan, but I haven't watched them in a long, long time.
Yeah, good boy.
It's not no fun. But yeah, who's got the best snacks then? The US or the UK? Obviously, do you miss anything out there?
Yeah, I mean, when I'm back in the UK, it's always much more fun. But whenever I bring stuff back home, like from the UK over to here, like my girlfriend's all over it, like any chocolate, any like all that stuff, man. I know Henry's nicked one of my dilute and juice like Robinson squash things. So yeah, that's the kind of stuff I live on over here.
Yeah, mate, you can't beat British chocolate and yeah, Robinson's, mate. Can't you? But mate, that pretty much wraps it up, and we just got to thank you for coming on and like you said at the start, being approachable, and you've been our first Olympic medalist. And you know, if anyone wants to hear more of Josh, he does his own podcast, Sit and Kick, and it's brilliant. Like, you're such a good talker, and I think after running, you'll definitely have a career in sort of punditry or something like that. Yeah, you won't have the stats. You'll just talk the facts, mate. You're just
I'll just roast people for the performances. I'm cool with that. But yeah, thanks you guys for having me on. This has been a lot of fun. And yeah, I enjoy being on podcasts. Everyone enjoys talking about themselves, man. Let's be honest. That's the way it goes.
Agreed. Anyway, take care, man. All right.
Cheers, boys.
Yeah, bye.